A protest earlier this month on the Roebling Suspension Bridge ended with the arrest of more than a dozen people, including two journalists with Cincinnati City Beat.
She's a reporter.
I'm also here live and documenting. What's your badge number?
This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss this case and what rights journalists have when reporting on protests are Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law professor John Bickers. Thanks for being here, John.
You're quite welcome.
And WVXU reporter Nick Swartzel. Welcome back, Nick.
Hey, Lucy.
Nick, describe what happened on the bridge July 17th. We just heard a snip from a clip from a video that you shot there.
Yeah, so this started as a vigil for Egyptian immigrant and local faith leader Imam Ayman Suleiman. And this was a vigil kind of protesting that he's been detained by ICE. After the vigil, a separate group of organizers started a march that went across the Roebling Bridge. They had kind of like neon vests on. They were trying to block the road. The march started to go across the bridge. A couple drivers got pretty upset about that. One tried to drive toward the group of protesters. The kind of like guys with the vests tried to block the SUV. Eventually, the SUV made it through without making contact with anyone. There was a moment where it looked like maybe they brushed up against a couple people. But then after that, the march proceeded in the southbound lane, just the southbound lane of the bridge, with traffic coming the other direction, until about the halfway point or a little after that, when it was met with a couple dozen at least police cruisers from Covington Police and other Northern Kentucky law enforcement agencies. Police gave orders to get on the two walkways on either side of the bridge. It seemed like within pretty quick succession from what I saw and was able to see from videos, maybe 30 seconds or a minute after that, police began arresting people. They came out with the non-lethal projectile guns, pepper ball guns, and it kind of started shooting at people's feet and began arresting people. The arrests later involved tasers. One at least involved a lot of punches, physical blows to a person being arrested. There has been, you know, the police have said that that person was grabbing at one of the officers and grabbed their non-lethal projectile gun and was reaching into a backpack. So that's all, we're going to find out more about that, I think, as this goes on. But that was kind of how things unfolded that day, as far as I saw.
Okay.
All of you guys stay down. I don't care. Get back. I'm allowed to witness this.
No, you're not. When we tell you, that's a lawful order. Get back.
That's another clip from your video. Nick, two of the people arrested were journalists. Tell us who they are and what they were charged with.
Sure. Just real quick context for that second clip. That was on the pedestrian walkway, and I was not making contact with the officer, and he was not making contact with me. I think those are important things to state about that particular clip. So the two people arrested that were journalists, this is City Beat journalist reporter Madeline Finnig and their photo intern, Lucas Griffith. Madeline was near the front of the march at this point, and I believe was maybe filming. I don't recall if she was actually filming at that time, but she had been filming and talking to people throughout. Lucas was toward the front, but moving around taking photos, like actively taking photos. And I saw him kind of moving toward the front when he got arrested.
So you mentioned that clip just now that you were on the pedestrian walkway. Were Madeline and Lucas on the roadway portion of the bridge? Were there any journalists on the pedestrian walkways arrested?
I don't know of any other journalists who were in the mix at that time other than the three of us, but that might be that they were just toward the back or something. Madeline, at the time she was arrested, was on the deck of the bridge, so on the roadway. So was Lucas. I had been there just moments before, and I move back and forth when I cover these kind of things, so I'll be at the back talking to people for a little bit. Then I want to see what's going on, so I'll run along the side. And that's why I was on the side at that point, was just to get up to the front to see what was going on up there.
Mm-hmm. John, does it matter whether the journalists were on the roadway part of the bridge, the deck of the bridge, or on the pedestrian walkway? Does that matter in terms of their constitutional rights as journalists?
It does. The government is not allowed to regulate speech as speech, but the government is allowed to regulate speech on the basis of the time, the place, or the manner. So it is okay for the government to say, you may not use this part of a road for speech activities because this is where people drive. And the key is, the Supreme Court has said repeatedly, two things have to happen with that. There have to be other alternative methods of getting the protest out, getting the speech out. So the government can't close off all avenues of getting a particular message out. And the other part of that is that the regulation has to be truly content neutral. So it can't matter what the protesters are saying. And the test I encourage students to in law school to think through this with is to treat it as if it had been a Go Bengals rally. If the police would react the same way to people carrying signs saying Go Bengals on the bridge, then the First Amendment is not going to provide extra protection. So for the walkway portions, I would assume that anybody there is going to be extraordinarily protected by the First Amendment because that's what sidewalks are for, is walking and speech.
Mm-hmm. We got an email from Steve from Oakley. Steve writes, a strong, open, and free press is an imperative for a truly free society. The press needs to also keep in mind, especially when covering demonstrations, they should be easily identifiable to the demonstrators and authorities alike. In the riots that followed the death of George Floyd, several Cincinnati journalists were arrested along with others. Nothing to identify them as press was being worn by them. While the spontaneity of the moment of some events may preclude sufficient visible ID for the press, it might be a good idea to have access to a safety vest with press on to remove any doubt. Waving a press card and shouting they are press in the chaos of the moment on the Roebling Bridge seems insignificant and in the end was futile. I want to mention that we did invite Covington's mayor and the police chief to be part of this discussion. They declined our invitation because of the ongoing legal matters there. But Covington's police chief has said it to at least one media outlet that one of the City Beat journalists didn't have press identification. Do you always have a visible press ID when you're reporting? How important has that been when you're covering protests?
I always have my ID on me. It is not always on a lanyard or, you know, kind of around my neck. And that is for my own safety. I've been punched. I've been pushed. I've been knocked down by people who didn't like that I was there. And so for me, there's a practical element of like, you know, I don't want to draw a target on my back. And just unfortunately in this day and age, that's a reality. But I do always have it right there so I can grab it and be like, hey, and I did have it out, you know, most of the time when things got kind of tense at the Roebling. So, you know, it's for us as journalists, there's a little bit of a trade-off there, I think.
Yeah. And do you have any recollection whether Madeline Fennig or Lucas had press ID that they were wearing around their neck or these yellow vests or anything like that that Steve is talking about?
They did not have yellow vests that said press on them. I have seen Madeline wearing press credentials before marches and protests. I've definitely seen that. She usually also has a hat that has the name of her publication on it. Not that that's a press credential, but,
sure.
You know. As to that day, I don't remember noticing that. Mm-hmm. So I'll say it that way. I can't say for sure that either one of them had it or not, but I don't remember noticing it.
Yeah. John, does that matter? Does having a visible media ID or like a big TV camera on your shoulder, does that change how police can or cannot interact with journalists under the law?
It probably makes a difference to how they do react because probably the police departments have various standard operating procedures for dealing with media, but it doesn't constitutionally make any difference. The First Amendment specifically includes the freedom of the press, but the Supreme Court has said that that doesn't mean the press as an institutional group are entitled to any extra protections. Indeed, most of the press shield laws are a matter of statutory work at the state level because the Constitution doesn't protect reporters even in their sources. So certainly the question of where they were and what they were doing matters. That they were press doesn't really matter.
Interesting. We're talking about the rights journalists have when reporting on protests. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Nick, this is asking you to kind of search your memory a little bit too, but I thought I remembered from your video that if Madeline was filming, she was maybe using a cell phone. That's something a lot of, you know, everyday citizens do these days too, film things with cell phones. Do you remember whether, what kind of equipment they had, you know, when they were doing their work, Madeline and Lucas?
Madeline definitely had a cell phone and was using that to record, which I was as well. I find that to be just the easiest and fastest and, you know, safest way, because a lot of expensive equipment can get broken in these kind of situations. Lucas, I remember having cameras and, you know, his photographer gear. And I actually thought he was part of one of the network TV stations because he had good gear and he was using it the way a reporter would use it.
Mm-hmm. Nick, have any of these charges against these journalists in particular been dropped?
Initially, they were charged with rioting. It was a rioting charge. It was a felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Those charges were dropped against the reporters. Now they face misdemeanor charges like failure to disperse, criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, which are still somewhat significant, but not nearly as significant as a felony charge, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And you reported these journalists had to pay bail. Do you remember how much that was? And do you get your bail back if any of these charges get dropped?
Sure. They paid $2,500 in cash, which was the same for all people who were arraigned. So that's the full $2,500. It's not a percentage. Regardless of the outcome of the trial, eventually they will get that money back. Now, you don't get that money back till you pay whatever fees and fines you owe at the end of it. But they should get that money back either way. Now, I will say their attorney tried to get their bail reduced to OR, which is kind of like then they would probably get the money back right away. But the judge didn't go for that. He's like, nope, you know, even though the felony charges are dropped, we're still going to do the $2,500 cash. Keep it at that. So.
And John, is that pretty typical that journalists are treated the same way as other people who are arrested in situations like this? I don't know if that's anything you've looked into.
I haven't, but I would imagine it to be very similar because I don't think a judge would want to be accused of favoritism.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss the obsession with fragrance and ask whether perfumes can be toxic. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about two journalists arrested earlier this month by Covington police and what rights journalists have when covering a protest. My guests are Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law professor John Bickers and WVXU reporter Nick Swartzel. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We mentioned earlier in the conversation the two journalists arrested were working for Cincinnati City Beat. City Beat issued a statement on Facebook that said in part, quote, "It is disappointing that our efforts to cover a newsworthy event were thwarted and that criminal charges were filed against our journalists for simply doing their job," end quote. The full statement from City Beat can be found on our website, wvxu.org. I also want to mention, for full disclosure, I know Madeline Fenning. We worked together at Channel 9 before I worked here and before Madeline worked at City Beat. So wanted to get that out there. We also wanted to bring this perspective into the conversation. Helen from Mason wrote to the Cincinnati Inquirer a letter to the editor that reads in part, "I'm not against peaceful protesters trying to get their message out, but when they take their protest to a public thoroughfare, that's a bridge too far, no pun intended. Those who condemn the Covington police for the altercation on the Roebling Bridge obviously don't care what that the protesters were impeding traffic and refused to get out of the way. The result was predictable. Is it really that difficult to find a location where citizens' daily routines aren't interrupted, but where your voices can still be heard? I don't think so." John, we talked about that a little bit before, but what rights do protesters or journalists have when they're determined to be obstructing traffic? Is there any right that they're allowed to do that?
Not to obstruct vehicle traffic. If the city or state has clear rules that can't be done, then those can apply. The concern is, and the concern I would have, Nick, based on the charges that you described, is things have to be done with specificity. There's a wonderful case from Cincinnati called Coates versus Cincinnati from 1971, in which at the time Cincinnati had a law that said you couldn't gather in groups of three or more and conduct yourself in a way that is annoying. And
that's a tough thing to define.
and that was the point that Justice Potter Stewart, who of course grew up in Cincinnati, made, is that we can't allow public intolerance of an idea to abridge the speech rights. So a little bit of leeway for a reporter stepping onto the roadway to take a shot of a protest seems to me a not unreasonable choice by the police. But if they have a law that allows for arrest of any pedestrian in the vehicle part of a roadway, then they can do that whether you're speaking or covering an event or anything else.
Is there Nick talked about earlier that maybe 30 seconds or a minute passed when between the time, am I quoting you correctly, Nick?
That's right. To my understanding.
Yeah, to your recollection that police said, get on the pedestrian walkways. There was a little bit of time where people could do that. Does that timing make a difference? I mean, is there any kind of under the law you've got, 3 minutes or whatever to get out of the way if the police tell you to get out of the way?
It might. If there isn't a clear law that says you can't ever walk on the vehicle portion and the police are saying, hey, you're being dangerous, you're endangering the vehicle traffic as well as yourself, get off the roadway, and then don't give you time to follow their orders to then charge you with violating the police order to disperse, seems like that's something that I would expect the defense counsel would bring up.
Hmm. And John, I think you addressed this before, but I just want to make perfectly clear, we've talked about how, freedom of the press it's a constitutional guarantee, but are the rights of journalists in situations like this any different from the rights of other members of the public, and should they be?
I think they should be, but under the Constitution, as the Supreme Court has interpreted it, focusing mostly on a case out of Louisville, Kentucky called Brandsburg, they really aren't. So members of the press, members of the media are on constitutional footing the same as everybody else.
Hmm. Well, here's a very basic question for you then. Why is freedom of the press in the Constitution? Why do the framers of the Constitution consider freedom of the press such an important part of a functioning democracy?
One theory that a number of scholars have is that that was just to make sure we understood that it was about not just spoken words, but printed words. There's another theory that, remember, in Britain, you had to get permission to issue a newspaper of any kind. And this was a way of saying, we're not going to allow the government to restrain you before the fact. You can publish anything you want, subject to punishment after publication. But the idea that there is a separate function, Jefferson's idea that we need a free press more than anything else, is not one that the Supreme Court has found to be embedded in the First Amendment.
Hmm. John, do journalists have to comply with police if an officer orders them to move away? We heard in one of those clips the officer trying to get Nick to move, even though they weren't making any physical contact. Nick was on the pedestrian walkway like he was told to be. What if, and do they have to move if an officer says move? And what if they're recording or filming and an officer says, shut down that camera, stop recording? Do they have to comply with orders like that?
I can understand a please clear the area. I can imagine the police having the authority to do that. Stop recording, and a number of states and localities have said we can prohibit recording in public. And while the Supreme Court hasn't weighed in on that one yet, I don't see how that's allowed under the First Amendment. So I think that sort of orders, some orders police can give, they don't have the authority to give. But we've got an emergency here, someone is in danger, please step back, I think is an order that anyone would have to follow no matter what their role.
Nick, I know you've been covering different protests, you've been a reporter for a while now, you've been in a lot of different situations. Have you encountered different police reactions at the protests or crime scenes you've covered as a reporter?
Absolutely. And just very quickly, I'll say that this isn't a part of our job that we do all the time, but I consider it a core part of our job to witness these things, to see what representatives of our government are doing, but also what people who are protesting are doing. And, you know, whatever the video or our eyewitness shows, that, you know, let the chips fall how they will. You know, I'm not here to root for one side or the other, but I think it's really important to witness that. I think that's a big part of our job. So that said, yes, different reactions at different times. Often police, once I say I'm pressed and I show my badge, they're like, okay, you know, don't get too close to what we're doing, but you're allowed to be here, and they leave me alone. There were protests, you know, during 2020 when the highway was shut down. And I remember one specific instance where police were trying to get protesters to stop getting on the highway. And I was like, hey, I'm pressed. And he's like, well, you better get up there then. And he, you know, was like, go, you know, don't be unsafe. We're trying to get these people off the highway. And when we get them off the highway, you need to come with them. But while this is happening, okay, you know. And that's the officer's discretion. I understand that. And that's not necessarily what the law says. But I will try to do my job the best I can while also trying to not get arrested and to, you know, obey the law and listen to officers.
Sure.
It's got to weigh those two things all the time.
John, what's the best way for journalists to assert their rights in a situation like this when things are moving very quickly? There's a lot of emotion in a situation like this. Is it the right thing to kind of do what the police tell you and sort it out later if a journalist thinks their rights have been violated? How should people advocate for themselves?
I think it depends on the moment. And I think Nick's approach of trying to make that individual human contact is probably really important, because I think a lot of police also, as Americans, want there to be a strong press. In a crisis, whether you just do what they say or keep filming because this is too important, I think every journalist is going to make that decision for him or herself.
Mm-hmm. Nick, I mentioned that we invited Covington's mayor and police chief on the program. They declined our invitation. How has the city of Covington responded to questions about how Covington police officers handled this whole situation?
Initially, in a statement, they said, hey, you know, look, we support the right of people to express their opinions and their beliefs. We support peaceful protest. But this was dangerous, and we needed to make sure the safety issues were taken care of. They have since said that, you know, at least one of the officers involved is under investigation and they're investigating, I think, the whole response to see if there's, you know, something they can do differently. The outcome of that investigation is, you know, to be seen.
Hmm. And what's next with this whole case in terms of what's happening in court?
Yeah, so the protesters who have not had their charges pled down and are, you know, clearing everything out, the four who face felony charges and the two reporters who face the misdemeanor charges, they'll be back in court in mid-August. The two reporters, it's August 14th. I think some of the other ones have different dates, but that's where we're going next.
Mm-hmm. John, is there something that all of us can kind of learn from this? You're a professor, so I'm sure you're always looking for lessons. What can all of us learn from these interactions, from the arrest of these journalists? Is there a lesson here?
I think the only lesson really is to hope that people will treat each other more like people. If the police show a little more patience in enforcing the law, and again, assuming that they would do the same thing for a group of pro-Bengals celebrants, and if protesters acknowledge that police are also trying to do their jobs, I think things can happen. There can be protests in a peaceful way, and sometimes things just go wrong.
Well, I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law professor John Bickers and WVXU reporter Nick Swartzel. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a terrific conversation.
Thanks,
Lucy.
Up next, we'll discuss the obsession with fragrance and ask whether some perfumes can be toxic. This is Cincinnati Edition.